Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Great to be with you today. And as I look out my window here from the studio and I see an almost cloudless blue sky and the sun is shining bright, it's not too much different than that Tuesday 18 years ago. Pretty crazy to believe that if it's 18 years ago, that means there were people who were born on this day 18 years ago who have only an understanding of this as history.
Mm-hmm.
The September 11th attacks definitely are a generation-shaping event. And I think, when I'm preparing for a show like this, and it's September 11th, and I think it's so very important that we do remember, I think it's important that we remember every day. It kind of seems silly to be, to button it up on September 11th and to try to remember the good that we have here in this country. Try to remember what was being attacked. You know, it wasn't just steel and structure that was attacked on September 11th. There was an idea of what we have here as Americans that was being attacked. And on September 11th, man, we all agree on that. Today, we all walk down the streets and we pass one another and we're all Americans. And people often talk about September 10th and September 12th and the importance of those days as well. I mean, I'd say June 1st is just as important as any other day. And we lose sight of that quite a bit. I know that I do. I know that it's hard to constantly focus on what makes this country good and constantly focus on how we can move in a direction where we can line up next to one another, regardless of any demographic that we fit in, regardless of any, stereotype that somebody else might put us in, and just appreciate those things that we appreciated when we didn't know how long what we have here in America would exist anymore. I mean, the gravity of what took place on September 11th, when you think about where you were probably, let's say, 4 p.m. on September 11th, what were you questioning? What were you afraid of? What did you then want to protect that you hadn't even considered needed protecting the day before? Probably not your political party. It's probably not high on the list. I think the idea of everybody being red, white, and blue together is, it's what I remember. I was 17 years old. I was sitting in my car driving a very snazzy 1996 blue Ford Taurus.
Nice.
Which some of my friends referred to as a blueberry. And I can see why. Man, those Tauruses used to be everywhere. Everybody knew somebody who drove a Taurus. Most people probably drove a Taurus. So I'm driving the short distance from my house to high school, my senior year. And I had Y98 on the radio, listening to Guy Phillips. And I believe, I wonder if we have that sound around here. Katie, can you look through the archives and
look
find that
the files?
Sound? Yeah.
I'll get it done.
Sure. Not that hard. when I was listening, the way it was broadcast initially as I was going into school, because I think school started here at like 8:15 or 8:20 was when my high school started. So I was driving in after the first plane had hit. I was probably late, or not late, but like I was never really late, but I was always in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally zoom right into the classroom, make sure that I've, you know, got everything I need for the classroom class, and Pear probably don't half the time. And as I'm driving into the parking lot, I hear, I think it was Guy Phillips say, you know, we got a report of an airplane that flew into one of the World Trade Centers in New York City. And I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. How does something like that happen? And the way it was reported, in my mind, and I think in the person's mind who was saying this, because it was on the morning show, so I assume it was Guy, but I, again, get that audio. And it was almost like, you know, you think about some type of puddle jumper or something that would be flying around that took a wrong turn and somehow or another had a tragic mistake. Like, never even occurred to me that it could have been done purposefully with a passenger plane full of people. Didn't occur to me. So we go into the classroom, honors English, first hour, ironically with Mrs. Fry, very dear teacher to me. I was not a Fry then. I was not a child bride. And we're in there, and the bell rings, we sit down, and I mean, it might have been 3 minutes past the bell, and our religion teacher, I went to a Lutheran school, everybody calm down. Our religion teacher comes knocking on the door. He's also the school counselor. And he pulls the teacher out of our classroom. And he says, he's talking back to her. And she walks back in, and she, I guess she looked spooked. But now that I'm an adult, I know exactly what she was experiencing. She was afraid. And she had a room full of kids. And I just think about all the teachers, like when she came in, she was talking to 17 and 18 year olds. These are the types of kids that you kind of have to give some information to, because if you don't provide it, they're going to get it from somewhere. You might as well give them what you have. And I think about all the first grade teachers who knew what was going on and had to continue on with story time and, you know, craft time. And, you know, you don't say anything to those children, but you have to show up that day. You have to be present, and you have to move in a direction that will create some sense of normalcy for your community. So she comes back in the room, and she says that a building in New York City has been attacked. And she said that there is an active threat on our country, that we could potentially expect more of these attacks to happen throughout the day. The second plane hits, and we realize as 17-year-olds that everything that we knew on our way to school that day is no longer the case. But we have no understanding about what is going to happen next. Nobody did. It's kind of one of the interesting things to me about being 17 years old at that moment. That's when you realize, when you look to the people in your life that are grown, that's when you realize that there are some things that the adults in your life can't fix. They can't make go away. They can't make it better. You can't change the channel and change the perspective. Every channel has smoking buildings on it. And the reporters, the journalists, the anchors, you can see the fear in their eyes, and you can hear it in their voices. I was sitting in pre-calculus class, which was second hour, and I remember the teacher, who happened to be the football coach, great person, funny, very football coachy, whatever stereotype that conjures in your head. Everybody's referencing that one teacher in their life. He was trying to go about teaching class, and I remember just being so frustrated, like, why are we trying to do math right now? The TV was on in the room, and it used to kind of bother me, but I get it now. What was he supposed to do? Just sit there and watch something that he couldn't control, and sit there and experience something along with the kids where he couldn't shield us from it? He had small children. He's got a wife. He's got a family. Everybody had family all over the country, and we did not know what was going to happen next. And then when that second plane hit, he took the eraser and he threw it at the chalkboard and he walked out of the room. That was real. That was very real. I will never forget that moment. We spent the rest of the day in various classes, either watching the coverage or maybe no TVs on and just kind of like a study time, because I think the teachers couldn't teach and they knew that we couldn't be held accountable for what we had to learn that day. And it's funny to me that on a day where the teachers didn't do any teaching, I think we all learned a lot. I remember leaving school and I remember being with my dear friend, Katie, not this Katie, but my high school friend, Katie. And I remember driving around looking for gas, and the lines to get gas, it was like a parking lot. Some gas stations hiked the price of gas. Some didn't. You saw pickup trucks driving around with newly mounted American flags flying in the back and just driving down the road. And when they did, everybody was cheering. What were they cheering for? Just the sight of the American flag? Somehow or another, that American flag, that visual of somebody willing to put that flag in their truck bed and just drive down the street was something that made people of all colors, all ages, all incomes, made them cheer. But we don't have that today. We certainly don't. When you think about how we treat one another, and really, it seems like the most important thing in our lives today is whether or not we support a specific politician, whether or not we stand on the correct side of a specific issue. So I think the power of September 12th, the power of September 11th in the afternoon, in the evening, it's something that we need to think about on days other than September 11th. When it really starts to cut to the quick and really starts to make you face first straight into how fragile this whole thing is and how important it is to protect it. I think that that's the greatness of America. And look what it took the last time to make us all realize it at the same time. I think that's a price that's too steep to pay. Katie and I went to New York City this summer, and it was an amazing trip, and we did all sorts of New York City things. Katie ate pizza and acted like Dave Portnoy, which I didn't even know the pizza thing. Katie's like, will you please take a video of me? I just have to do this. And I'm videoing her, and she's like, you know the rules. I'm like,
what?
Katie, I don't know the rules.
What are they?
Why are there rules? It's pizza. Now I know. Now I get it. But we rode on tour buses, and we just walked for hours, it seemed, around New York City, just walking and looking, kind of smelling in some cases. But it was amazing to be there, and the city is just buzzing. Always. It doesn't stop. So 18 years later, after this happens, that city is still strong. But the last thing we did before we left is we went to the 9/11 memorial. And I would encourage you, if you go on to facebook.com/Annie Fry Show, I would encourage you to check the video that we put together after our trip there. We documented our walk through the 9/11 memorial, and you can walk through it with us. And it's a pretty powerful video. And I'm glad that I have that, because it preserves it in my memory for me. And when we come back, if Katie will grace us with her story, Katie was 8 when 9/11 happened. That's a little bit different than 17.
Mm-hmm.
And so Katie got to do this 9/11 memorial with me. My husband was there as well. But her experience of walking through it and seeing and hearing some of these stories, it was kind of cool for me to experience that with Katie, because I realized I'm probably close to the youngest people who could have absorbed this and really understood it, even though I don't think anybody really understood it. But being 17 years old, you get much younger and you're not as forced to come to grips with that world that you have to go into as an adult. And so Katie got to experience the 9/11 memorial with us. And while we both walked through it together, it was a very different experience for both of us. So when we come back, We're going to do that. But I'm going to give you this real quick before we leave here. That United 93 flight, which we always talk about New York City. We remember that the Pentagon was attacked as well, but we also remember Flight 93. Here's some phone calls from that.
I only have a minute. I'm on United 93, and it's been hijacked by terrorists. They have a bomb. And I just wanted to say I love you. And I'm going to miss you.
I just
want
to let you know I love you. And I'm going to be so busy in New York. You just wanted me to know that I love you always.
Hey,
Dad,
it's
Queenie.
Hey, Dad, it's Queenie.
Hey, Dad, it's
Queenie. Okay, well, I just wanted to tell you I love you. We're having a little problem on the plane. I just love you more than anything, oh, Dad.
Mostly, I just love you, and I just wanted to tell you that. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to tell you that again or not.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Usually, I have a sheet in front of me that's got the... I have it now. See, this is a problem.
Thank God for Tony.
Do you know what the number one thing that I use this sheet for? When I say... Welcome back to the show. Happy. And then I look at the sheet to see what day it is. Do you see this?
Oh.
Happy Monday.
What day is it?
That's a mean, mean joke.
Man.
Today's Wednesday. We're halfway home, folks. Congratulations. It's also September 11th. And I was just sharing my story about my September 11th experience and just kind of how it ages over 18 years. You remember what you experienced, but you also have the context of year after year after year. We've now had 3 administrations since then. And we have another election coming up here in, what, 15 months or something? I don't know. Forever. It's forever away.
And never ending.
Yeah. And I think it's important to not just go straight back to that day on September 11th and skip 18 years of time and remember that specific day then and then go back tomorrow to living the 2019 life. So Katie and I went to New York City this summer in June and we visited the 9/11 memorial. And I would encourage you to go to facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. This is a video that Katie and Jared, my husband, and I shot while we were down there, and then I put it all together. What do you think about, tell us about your experience and then also like when you watched the video for the first time.
So I was 8 going on 9 years old in third grade when September 11th happened. And at that young, there's not a lot that you can remember. But I remember being in class and being told that we were getting out of class early. And for some reason, that should be a really joyous occasion for an 8 and 9-year-old. But everybody, all the teachers were kind of in a panic and scrambling around.
You could kind of sense it.
You could sense it. And so I was really curious to why nobody was excited that we were having a half day that day. So going home on the school bus, all the kids are talking. We're all chiming in. Why are we going home early? Nobody really knew the answer. And once I got home, I was just set back because my mom was home and she was really disheveled. She was upset. She was crying. And I had no idea why. Well, still, I mean, on that day, I could not put 2 and 2 together. Yeah. I did not know why everyone was so upset. But then fourth grade happened the year after. And that's when 9/11 was written in the history books. Mm-hmm. And from fourth grade on, it was in all of our texts.
We learned about it.
We learned about it right in school. Right away. But as time moves on, you kind of forget some of these things, these pieces to the puzzle that was 9/11.
And some of the stories that never really made it out into the public, one of them was that we learned while we were in New York City, actually from the boat tour guide, who looked like knockoff Robert Downey Jr. Kind of wondering if it,
Robert Downey Jr.
But they were telling the stories of post 9/11. One of the sad things, and I had never heard this before, was that a lot of people, obviously, to go into Manhattan, commute, you know, over with a boat, with a train, lots of different ways that they would go to work. And as time passed by, all those people who drove to the train station or to, you know, to take a ferry over the bay, their cars just sat. They just sat in parking lots until they had determined that those people died and they never came back to get their car. So they had this amount of time that passed where they had to piece together what was left to rest where it was when people who perished in the September 11th attacks just never came back to collect their car, or their belongings, wherever it left. This is really like kind of a stunning image.
Something else that he said that really struck me was the people of New York City, the firemen, law enforcement, governor, mayor, all starting to realize that this was not a search and rescue anymore.
Yeah.
It was a search. Mm-hmm. And that was hit home for me. So whenever we were going through this 9/11 memorial, I didn't really know what to expect. I knew that I was going to be relearning a lot of things that I've read about in the history books. But to actually see artifacts that were dug up from the World Trade Center was a stunning moment for me. And something I remember being teary-eyed looking at Ladder 3, the remains of Ladder 3, where I believe it was Captain Patrick Brown. Mm. That story was something I have never heard before. And it just really shook me to my core to listen to his story, the firemen that were on Ladder 3, knowing that they just worked a full shift and then had to work in, again, the next 24 hours to try to recover what they could from the World Trade Center. It was just something that made me...
And they didn't make it.
They didn't make it.
And they knew when they went back that they weren't going to make it.
Yes. And they did it anyway because it was their duty. Mm-hmm. It was their job.
One of the things that's in the 9/11 memorial and the Ladder 3 and is it the helmet that he wears that mm-hmm. is... This is all in the video that you can see at facebook.com/AnnieFryShow. But one of the things that really struck me is they found the beam that was part of the impact where one of the planes went into the World Trade Center. And you can see the way that that specific beam is bent because of the impact of the plane. And they explained how if they're ever going to have to repair anything, like all of the different beams that are on the structure are numbered or mapped or whatever. So mm-hmm. they could tell when they found it with the way that it was contorted, that it was a point of impact of the plane. It's just the museum in and of itself. Obviously, if you ever get a chance to go to New York City, it's a must do. We went on the guided tour. If you watch the video, you see Katie and I and my husband are wearing headsets. So what they do is if you've never been in a museum like this before, you wear a headset and then the guide speaks and tours you around the museum, but he speaks into a microphone. So that's not a lot of people shouting. It's a very mm-hmm. solemn place. And just the things that you experience in that museum really kind of round out the experience of what we remembered individually here in the Midwest or wherever you were in that location. Tony, can you tell your story? We're going to have Brian Kilmeade. I want to say that we're going to have Brian Kilmeade here in a minute, but I want to ask you to tell us a little bit about it. We can talk about it more later too.
Sure. I was on the radio. I was working at a music station, 104.1 The Mall. For anybody who may remember that fine station here in St. Louis. I was doing nights, so my air shift was from 6 to midnight. So for something that happened at 9 in the morning was not something that I was usually going to be awake for. But that day before on Monday, we had another one of our DJs out that day. So I did two air shifts and was given Tuesday off. So I had 9/11 off because I worked a double on Monday and I was asleep in my apartment and my dad called me and he told me what happened. And I had to make the decision because the remote control in my bedroom for the television in my bedroom was broken. So was I going to get out of bed and turn on the television and see what was happening, or was this just something that was not as important as, you know, as I thought it was, you know, as my dad had called me to tell me about. So I did, got out of bed, turned on the television, and since I had the day off, I literally sat in front of the television for the next 24 hours and just watched it all happen. I didn't move. I just, because every minute was changing and updating. And then we had, you know, meetings at work on how we would handle things on the air going forward. I had a live broadcast that I was doing that weekend that we did a moment of silence from on a Saturday night. And I had people calling me from all these different locations saying that when, you know, I was at a bowling alley and they had your radio show on Saturday night. And when you did your moment of silence, the whole bowling alley stopped what they were doing. And I was on the air on a Saturday afternoon when when the counterstrike in Afghanistan started, and we had all been taught, you know, like we'd been told if anything with breaking news, you know, we immediately would go to national coverage. And so I had to break into a song and tell people that we, you know, that this counterstrike had started in Afghanistan and we were going to live national coverage. So yeah, it was crazy. It was, you know, things were changing every single day, and everybody, we had to behave differently. We took certain songs off the radio. Mm-hmm. My apartment was right across the street from Lambert Airport. And we had a lot of people in the apartment complex that worked, you know, that were, you know, pilots and people that worked at the airport. And I didn't realize, because I was so used to it, that there was just constantly airplanes flying over the apartment, because we were right, you know, no matter what time of day it was, because we were right across the street.
It was quiet.
And when they grounded the planes that week, the silence was eerie. And to drive past the airport and just see all these airplanes just parked along the runways, just, you know, hundreds of airplanes just sitting on runways, not moving, and the silence in the sky that you become so accustomed to hearing airplanes constantly was just eerie.
I remember looking into the sky and thinking how eerie is a good word for it. Disconcerting it was to see the clear sky. And I remember looking up all the time just to see if I saw a plane. And I would ask myself, what's scarier, no planes or a plane?
Yeah. Because if there was a plane,
it wasn't supposed to be. Yeah. And it was just a very different experience. Let's take a quick break, because when we get back, we're going to talk to somebody who works in New York City, somebody you know very well. Brian Kilmeade is going to join us. And I'm going to ask him about September 11th, 2001 and September 11th, 2019. Brian Kilmeade joins us in just a minute. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Great to be with you today. Hope you're enjoying this day. It's beautiful outside if you're looking at it, because I think it's 100 degrees or something. It's a little toasty. I know there's a heat advisory from like 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. And I have on fuzzy socks and boots. Tony has on a hoodie, and Katie's wearing a blanket, because it is.
It's crazy.
What do you think the temperature is in here right now?
Probably around 60.
I was thinking 60.
Yeah.
Realistically speaking, not exaggerating, 60.
Yeah.
When I drive home.
Yeah, I set my I set my thermostat at home at 62 at night when we sleep. And it's definitely at least that cold, probably.
It feels like it's like 55 to me.
Yeah, it's cold. It's colder. I would say it's colder than that. So.
Well, it's ridiculously hot outside.
I keep meaning to bring in my thermometer, my laser thermometer every day just to see.
Well, when you
just
look
out of curiosity,
when you look outside and you see this clear blue sky and it's sunny and it's peaceful and
it's blazing hot out there.
Well, it wasn't 18 years ago. It was a perfect day. At least here in St. Louis, it was an absolutely beautifully perfect, peaceful day. And as Tony was talking about before, if there was a plane in the sky, you would have seen it. And quickly we'd quit seeing those planes in the sky. Let's talk to our guest. Brian Kilmeade joins us. Great to speak with you, Brian. Definitely 97.1 listeners love you every day, 9 to noon. And we love being able to talk to you right now.
Yeah, you guys got an incredible lineup. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Thank you. I wanted to talk to you specifically from your experience of being in New York City, because the question I wanted to ask you is, how do you compare September 11th, 2001 to September 11th, 2019? With all the time that has passed there, today makes us go back and quickly remember where we were, what we saw, how we felt. But 18 years later, I don't want to say we've forgotten it, but we've definitely had some time pass, and it kind of makes us reflect in a different way.
Well, I'm encouraged. I like that we read the names. I don't know if you guys carry that. I like that, you know, Ray Kelly and Bernie Kerik and Rudy Giuliani are all around to talk about the recovery process, the counterterror process. I like the fact in New York, as I mentioned today, they just now said mandated a moment of silence on 9/11. Everything's going backwards with history, and they're trying to ignore history. I like the fact that they're recognizing recent history. But 2020, I mean, the 20-year mark is going to be huge when we come up on 2021.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged. I mean, I'm encouraged that in 2018 people still care and reflect. And if you told me in 2002 that we would care so much, I would be pleased. So I don't know how it feels in St. Louis, but in New York, I think it's getting proper respect.
That's good. I would say so, definitely here. And it seems like most September 11th since then have looked, at least here, our weather was much like the weather was in New York City that day. You know, not a cloud in the sky, and just as picture perfect as September can be. And it seems like those September 11th since then have felt the same way. I think it's interesting, it being the 18th anniversary of this event, to think that there's a whole group of people who were born after September 11th now, who are only going to hear about this in some capacity the way they're going to hear about Pearl Harbor or any other story out of their history book. What do you think the lesson is for Americans today as they now learn about this event?
Well, I mean, put it this way, really learn. Don't just memorize. I mean, if you really learn, you would not be saying, why are we still in Afghanistan? If you really understand, you wouldn't say, why are we spending all this money in the military? If you really understood, you'd be giving more credit to law enforcement, local, as well as the CIA and FBI, because they're the front lines now. I mean, they're looking to do the backpack bombs. They're looking to penetrate a sporting event. They're looking to do the next, do the next nightclub shooting, like we saw it over in Orlando. And that's where you got to spend the money, and you have the support and be patient. I love that if we're going to have a controversy with Afghanistan, I'd like that it happened a week from 9/11. Because, do you understand, no one made a mistake going into Afghanistan. You might say militarily that we should have had a bigger footprint. Let's debate it. But we cannot pull out. And if you study the event, what led up to it, and how we ignored it and it welcomed it, you would not be saying, why do we still have troops there, like the irresponsible Rand Paul or liberal groups who basically think we deserve what we got. Not all liberal groups, but a lot of the extreme groups. Well, if America, you know, wasn't involved in the Middle East, America was involved in Europe, the world would not be the same place without America. We don't want to own your land. We don't want to own your industry. We want to be able to fight for freedom and get the back of our allies. So I think that's it, number one. Number two is we're seeing the kids on 9/11. I mean, some of those kids, the wives were pregnant and their dads never came home. So now we're seeing 18, 19-year-olds reading their parents' name. Oh. That's what really, really struck me. And, you know, you see older kids now, and you kind of say to yourself, I remember that kid. That's a young man or a young woman.
Yeah. The time passage, the reflection on the day, the September 11th, 2001 specific day, the stories that have evolved since then, I think, are so important and something that we can cling to. We're speaking with Brian Kilmeade, host of the Brian Kilmeade Show right here on 97.1 FM Talk from 9 a.m. to noon. You are definitely a historian. You've put out many great books that are bestsellers, and you study history in a way, as you said, not to memorize it, but to really learn it and understand it. Do you think that we're doing a good enough job right now in our education to reach the actual understanding of these stories? Do you think there's something we could do better?
Everything. I'm amazed at how little we're learning about history. And I think people have a natural inclination to want to know history because it's stories, and it's stories you can relate to because of your history. Hey, what happened? Where did Lincoln live? You know, where did Washington grow up? Where did the battles take place? Where did the spies learn their craft? Walk around, see the battlefield at Civil War. So if you want to learn history, instead of learning about Rome and saying, well, I'm never going to get the money to go to Italy, what if you went to Pennsylvania and checked out Gettysburg? And if you can have that touch, feel element to it, I think that you really like it. And I want to see social studies and history really amped up in this country. It'll be you talk about common ground. Well, let's agree on our history and then agree where you want to go from here. Now we're disagreeing on our past, which is bizarre to me. We weren't. Yeah, but now we disagree, you know, where we came from. I watched Beto O'Rourke basically condemn America in every way and blame us for global climate change. We used to be the arrogant country who never saw anything we did wrong. Now we're the country with no self-esteem that wants to apologize. How the hell did that happen?
Yeah, people stopped learning. People forgot where we came from. I think it's an important conversation in the context of the meetings that were taking place or potentially taking place last week and the news of yesterday that John Bolton is out as national security advisor. What's your reaction to President Trump's move here, and what do you think he's going to do next with this position?
I think Mike Pompeo is going to have a huge say in who gets in, and maybe it's better. I mean, he's a conservative. He's for a stronger America, but he understands the president. See, John Bolton, I'm the biggest fan. He'll be on our show hopefully next week. He was supposed to be on today. He knows this is how he feels, whether it's George Bush or Condoleezza Rice or Secretary of State Pompeo or General Mattis. He'll sit there and stare you right in the eye and say, I think you're wrong. And I'm sure he did that with the president. And instead of working the president and go, Mr. President, I understand what you want to do, but I think that this might be a better way to approach it. Evidently, he was very direct and intolerant. And that doesn't work good for the advisor role. But I'm still a huge fan. I think it's laughable that Rand Paul says he's naive. Naive. Naive to think Iran's the enemy, to know for sure North Korea can't be trusted, to understand that the Russia's out to supplant us looking for revenge. A lot of things the president's done, John Bolton agrees with. He told me his finest hour, he believes the president's finest hour, is when he got up and walked away from the North Korean deal, and it was pretty clear that they were not going to follow through or give anything, and they just guaranteed the president would not leave empty-handed. And the president goes, nope, nothing here, we're gone. And John Bolton said, finest hour. He texted me from Vietnam.
Wow.
Finest hour. So it's just they're different, but they're not different. People say, oh, he's going to write a tell-all book. Really? Not really. Tell what? They disagreed? I mean, that's not a tell-all book. I mean, we have enough of them. We have a different Trump tell-all book coming out every week. You can't shock us with a Donald Trump story. Please get over it.
Yeah, you know, I think people are exhausted with the palace intrigue in that capacity. I saw, you know, on several news channels yesterday the list of all the people who have been fired or who submitted their resignations from this Trump administration. You know, the question I have for you is somebody who's sat down and had conversations with the president. When he makes these decisions, do you think he's making them in the best interest of the country, or do you think he's emotionally sensitive, which is how he's painted in some circles?
Yeah, I think both is correct, Danny. I also think that John Bolton's right, that John Bolton offered his resignation 2 nights ago. He said, think about it. And then he got up in the morning and he said, I resign. And the president goes, no, I'm telling everyone I fired you. And John Bolton is holding to his story. He's been quiet today, but I believe Bolton quit. And as we all know, the same thing happens in sports every day. Oh, well, I'm very happy with my quarterback. I'm very happy with my coach. They're going to last all season, and they're gone the next day.
Yeah.
And we give the owners and the players passes. You know, we found that Kevin Durant was so happy in Golden State. What did he tell us last night? He never was one of the guys. He never fit in. Was he lying? No, he was telling the press what he thinks was going to help him have the most success. And that's not lying. You know, that is talking about the palace intrigue and keeping the truth to yourself, so to speak.
Well, Brian Kilmeade, we love listening to you. Your show is such fantastic prep for me coming into the noon hour here, and we just hear about how much people love you on this station all the time, and it's always a great opportunity to talk to you specifically on this day. Thanks for helping us remember the importance of September 11th.
Thank you, Annie. Have a great day.
Yep, you as well. Brian Kilmeade, author, television show host, radio show host, sports broadcaster.
Brian Kilmeade extraordinaire.
Yeah, book tour taker. That book tour that he did here in the St. Louis Library, which we went to, was that spring or fall, winter? I don't know when it was. But it's back. There are so many people there.
Oh, my gosh. So many.
Awesome to have him on this special day. If you have not checked out some of the books he's written, you want to talk about knowing your history, Brian Kilmeade does a fantastic job of writing that. All right, we're going to be right back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere. The Annie Fry Show continues in just a moment.